My presentation is going to be focused on a university community, and I don't have any financial things to declare, but I didn't put that in my slides. So my co-author is Emma Walker. She's a graduate student at York University where the study was conducted. Oh, here we go. Some surveys that have been done in Ontario have shown that about 3% of the people of the general population, when asked what are the risk factors are for cancer, identified alcohol as one of the risk factors. It's really out of sync with regard to the actual role that alcohol has. There's also a very sharp contrast between, a sharp contrast between the evidence of the high damage from alcohol and low awareness of the risk among high-risk drinkers. I'm a member of the Toronto Cancer Prevention Coalition, and we looked at many risk factors related to cancer, and then we applied for funds to do a small pilot study among undergraduate women in York University, which is has about 40,000 students. This is from a World Health Organization study conducted some years ago, and as you can see, alcohol is the fifth highest risk factor of the 26 that were examined in terms of disability-adjusted life years. This is worldwide. If you go to established economies like the United States or Canada, it's the third highest risk factor below tobacco and blood pressure with regard to disability-adjusted life years. There's also evidence of the relationship between alcohol and a number of cancers, as indicated here, as you know, contributing cause to cancers, psychiatric conditions, and so on. So there's many risks related to alcohol that are likely not known by the general population, and particularly among university students. So why focus on undergraduate women? Well, the studies have shown that the episodic heavy drinking are similar for males and females among high school students in Ontario and into the late teens and early 20s. Once they get a little older, they spread apart in terms of the risk levels, but at age 8 to 18, the percentage who say they got drunk in the last month or drink high risk manner are about the same for young men and young women. There's also a high level of interest in health, diet, and fitness among women, and we also felt that the future leaders and potential long-term implications will provide positive role models for their cohort siblings and families through prevention. This is one other slide, and then I'm going to move on to the actual study. Here you can see from a worldwide study that was done where I work at the Center for Addiction and Mental Health that of the deaths from alcohol, where alcohol was considered a contributing cause, 20% are cancer. And injuries are higher, and unintentional injuries as well. So the screening and brief intervention, and I'm speaking to the converted here, I'm sure, is used in many contexts in clinics and hospitals and doctor's offices and so on. Randomized controlled trials have shown desired impact at 6 to 12 months through systematic reviews and original studies. But the protocol varies a great deal in terms of the referral methods and the screening, delivery, resource material, follow-up time, and so on. And there are many challenges, such as which population to focus on, the funding, commitment of health specialists, tracking, and refresher interventions. So the goals of our project was to increase awareness of alcohol consumption as a risk factor among for breast cancer among women aged 70 to 24, and to increase the opportunities to understand their risks, and also to increase awareness that not all members of their age sex cohort drink in a high risk manner, and to offer training and mentoring to relevant campus staff to deliver brief interventions in the hopes to reduce high risk drinking to those members of the campus student community who are interested in receiving it. So we went to the health clinic at the university, and we proposed that, first of all, that the doctors execute the screening, and they really declined. They didn't the initial screening. They didn't want to do that. They felt it was too time consuming, And so they suggest an alternative, which was part of the pilot study, but it also had some drawbacks, as you will see. My co-author, Emma Walker, did the screening in the waiting room and then sent qualified patients to the doctors. And so some of the benefits of this change was this process would better use the time of the doctors, letting them deal only with qualified patients. And then we paid the clinic $20 per intervention instead of the original $30. And this allowed the research to offer compensation to the patients as well. And we also had a longer survey with more detail about the patient's habits and demographic information. So this is how the actual process worked. So you can see that the researcher approached the young women coming into the clinic for a doctor's appointment, and some were refused or did not say they did not consume alcohol at all. And the interested ones were given the audit screening test, and then the student, going up at the top here, the student was called in before she had completed the screening test, and then the student returned to finish the test and was given the $5, or the student did not return. And then if you go down to the green part, you can see the student completed the test before the appointment, given the $5 in the information package, and then the student scored under 7 in the audit, or if they scored 7 or more, they were asked to give the screening test to the doctor. So the fact that they were given the screening test was a signal to the doctor that the student should get the brief intervention. And then the student did not give the form to the doctor, or the student gave the form to the doctor. So here's what happened. First of all, to our surprise, this is over several months, 530 patients were approached. Only 9% refused, 75% completed the audit, and 12% did not drink. But the percentage that qualified was almost 50%, so it's a very, very high percent of people who came in the clinic actually scored 7 or more on the audit, and therefore were qualified for the brief intervention according to our criteria. Now, this is not a random sample of women at the university. These are women who are coming in for a doctor's appointment for whatever reason. So the drinking level may be somewhat higher, but not that much higher from their cohort. 50% did not qualify for the brief intervention. Of those who did qualify, you can see here that about 8% who qualified were not sent for the brief intervention, because what happened there, they were called for their appointment before the process was completed. But then you see that the 91% who qualified were sent for the brief intervention, and of them, of that percentage, 57% received the brief intervention because they gave the screening form to the doctor, but 42% did not give the screening form to the doctor. So you had a high percentage who were given the screening form, did not give it to the doctor, and 42% and 57% did. And I'll talk about that a little further down the road. So our population that were used in this pilot study was quite different from the women in Ontario. So in women in Ontario, they used a slightly different threshold, under 8, and only 11% were over 8. Whereas if you consider 7 as a threshold on the far left side, you can see that about 57% scored 7 or more. So you had a much higher percentage of women in the university population through the clinic that had a high score. And then here you have some other data with regard to women and men at the same age group, and then there was another study done, and you can see again that that 34% were over 8, whereas our group had 57% over 8. Excuse me. So here's a comparison now of what their perceptions were of binge drinking compared to their own responses. And you can see that the lower line, how often do you have 5 or more drinks on one occasion, and the vertical axis is how often do you think the average 19 to 20 year old female has 5 or more drinks on one occasion. And basically the people who drank more on one occasion were likely to say that the threshold is higher. So their perception is that heavy drinkers' perception is that other people drink like them, and so that the more you drink, more likely to think that the people around you drink that at that level. In this graph, you can see as the students' usage level went up, they were less likely to give the doctor their screening test. So you can see if they scored mild, they received the brief intervention, but as you go higher in the scale, I'm sorry, I don't have a pointer here, but as you go higher on that line here, let's go over here. So here you can see they're about the same, and then you have a higher percentage did not receive the brief intervention as they have a higher level on the audits scale. Thanks. The students who did not follow through by giving the form to the doctor had a slightly higher average perceived perception of social norms than those who did. That also supports the previous results. We did a small scale follow up. This is about a year after the intervention, and we found a lot of the students had moved. It was difficult to track them down, and we found 24. And one of the things that we tried to find out was the reasons to give the doctor the form, and they said because the doctor did not ask about it. Asked for the form and they would have produced it. 2 said they did not want to take the time to discuss it in the appointment, and 3 said they did not want to lecture about their consumption. So these are very preliminary findings, and we need to do more work on this and to find out what's going on. One of the main challenges that is very evident from this pilot study is that our system of trying to get the people who scored the right amount to get this receiving the screening brief intervention did not work for almost half the cases. And so we think that a better system would be to have an online system so that if the student did the screening in the waiting room and was online, and if they scored another level, this would provide a signal to the doctor in his or her clinic right next on the same floor, and then when they showed up for the appointment, the doctor would know that this person had scored at that level and that they should be provided with a brief intervention. There is a big challenge because the compensation, the doctors were not prepared to do the actual screening themselves. They were prepared to do the brief intervention, because if they did the screening themselves, that many of the patients would not be eligible, and so they did not prepare to take the time. So it was a bit of a checks and balances. On the one hand, we were able to identify a large percentage of the student population who were eligible for the screening and brief intervention, but to convey that information effectively to the doctor at the same time was a challenge. We were also quite surprised at the percent who drank in a high-risk manner. Even though it wasn't a university population, we did not expect that almost 50% of the female students would score 7+ on the audit. But we think it's very much part of the student culture. And also I think that and this is not probably a big surprise, that the risk of other damage is much more, such as trauma, interpersonal violence, low marks, and disrupted relationships may be much more relevant to this age group than long-term chronic disease. So looking at this within the university, larger university context, I think it's important to consider many other things that need to be done at the university setting in order to control the damage from alcohol on campus. Brief interventions is an important tool, but it cannot be the only tool. You need to have a multidimensional approach that also looks at the environment, that looks at density of outlets, pricing, server training, advertising controls, harm reduction, and social networks to disseminate information on alcohol-related risks and brief intervention. So I think I'll stop at that point. I have to indicate my acknowledgments and my contact information. Thank you very much. Any questions? No questions. Yes, Wyatt.
At UCLA, we have difficulty getting the screening results into the medical record because it's considered very sensitive information.
Yeah.
They're okay with having a pre-screen, but we do the assist and getting that information into the medical record. So it would impede that kind of the scores going directly to the physician's or the nurse's computer.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Or the mental health therapist's computer. So we also kind of had that same situation where the student does the assist on the computer, then has to bring the paper results to the clinician. So I was just wondering if you guys had the problem with the confidentiality in the medical records, or how did you get around that?
The students signed a consent form, and they were asked to read the consent form. It was a paper form, right?
Oh, okay.
And they read that, and then they filled out. I sort of went over the stuff quickly. Pardon, sorry about that. But they filled out a one page, which was basically an audit form. And when they got to the bottom, they went to some other forms to fill in. But at the bottom of the audit, it was clear whether they scored 7 or plus. And when they finished filling out all the forms, the top, that one form with the audit, was a doubles form, and the top one was torn off. And if they scored 7 plus, they were asked to give it to the doctor. In some cases, the students said, I didn't realize that. Well, it was clear in the consent form, but of course they hadn't read the consent form very closely. So the tear-off sheet, it was paper, so I'm not sure if it actually, it probably went in their file, but I'm not sure if it was part of their medical, electronic medical records. But we haven't done the online. We don't know. We think that's the way to go, but we're not sure what sort of challenges we would encounter. Other challenges that we would encounter. It's clear that a lot of the students did not want to. They're prepared to accept the $5, fill in the form, and take the document, put it in their purse. Then walk into the doctor's office for their appointment, and then not give it to the doctor. And it was, as indicated, it was the heavier drinkers who were more likely to not give it to the doctor than the lighter drinkers. So I'm not sure how you get around that. It's a bit of a roadblock, unless you have. The nurse do the screening, and then the screening thing is given right in the doctor's, in the patient's file before the doctor sees the patient. But it is all sort of transfer stuff. Go ahead.
Did the form that the woman filled out,
yeah,
said that he had a score on it, did it say something next to the score that gave them an indication that they were over?
I don't. No, it didn't. It did not. I think it indicated a total thing at the bottom, but it did not indicate what the total represented. Yeah, it was very standard, questions, and then there was further information about about the risks of drinking and drinking habits and so on and so forth. So we have quite a bit of information. So this is just the tip of the iceberg of the 200 and some. Okay. Well, thanks to the presenters and audience for the session. Thank you very much.